Baseball is back, basketball is heating up, and the NFL draft is right around the corner. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app, the biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.
Welcome to Special Edition, a weekly look at the issues in the news and the personalities shaping the stories. Special Edition is a production of Intercom Communications.
Welcome to Special Edition. I'm Paula Degnan. It's the 4th of July weekend. Many things are planned throughout the weekend, and many of them that are planned are going to be done much differently this year. Today on Special Edition, if you are planning a trip to the Gettysburg National Park, there are things that will be happening there. Jason Martz will join Intercom's Jason Barsky to tell us about that. And also, Wilkes-Barre Mayor George Brown joins Jason as well, and he's going to be talking about fireworks. Scranton Mayor Paige Cognetti will be here, and she's going to talk about some of the programs in Scranton for businesses to bounce back from the COVID-19 restrictions. Speaking of COVID-19, I was able to catch up with Bill Johnston Walsh. He is the Pennsylvania State Director for AARP, and he's going to tell us about that organization and how they are trying to get more help for nursing homes, as well as assisted living and other long-term care facilities across the state. Starting off our special edition program today, we're going to hear from Luzerne County Manager David Pedry. He was with Intercom's Frank Andrews and Mark Davis, and he tells them about the way that they're going to be holding concerts throughout the county this summer season.
Dave Pedry, Luzerne County Manager, is on the line with us right now. David, thanks for joining us.
Hi, good afternoon, guys. How are you?
Good. You had a news conference this afternoon. Tell us all about this summer concert series.
We did. Well, last year we had this huge Rock in the River summer concert series at the Riverfront Millennium Circle. It was three wonderful nights. Over 6,000 people attended, and we were excited for this year, expand on that. However, unfortunately, like everything else in the pandemic, we had to cancel it. So we got to thinking and started getting creative and said, instead of doing this Rock in the River, we decided to do a Rock in the County. And this is a series of five free concerts that we're putting a band on the back of a truck. That truck will be going parade style through five different cities of Luzerne County. You know, people are talking about curbside pickup and drive-throughs and everything along those lines. Well, we're bringing it to you. You don't got to drive anywhere. We're bringing the music right to residents of Luzerne County. Sit down, enjoy it, enjoy a beverage, grab something to eat, and just enjoy music and getting outdoors. And we're doing it safely, utilizing social distancing, but it's a good opportunity for the people to get out and about.
Now, do you have a schedule yet?
We do. It's up on our website, luzernecounty.org, and on visitluzernecounty.org as well, from 6 p.m. to 7:30 every Friday, starting on July 10th. We're going to be in a different city. Wilkes-Barre, Hazleton, Pittston, Nanticoke, and Kingston 44, all the way through August 7th. We have some great bands coming out, all local acts. Most importantly, Frank, the people have did such a phenomenal job fighting this pandemic in Luzerne County. We were the fifth highest per capita at one point. Just an opportunity to say, thanks for what we're doing. Get out there and enjoy it, because I'm sure everybody has had their fill of television and Netflix and those things, and they want to get out and about.
Now, Dave, just a couple of questions. The mayor of Scranton was on, and she said that all of a sudden she is anxious that people are dropping their guard, and she's concerned about the summer. What are your feelings?
Yeah, absolutely. Listen, I see the same thing as I echo her concerns when it comes down to things like when I see what's going on in Pittsburgh and some other cities as well. But there is an ability to for us to get out and maintain social distancing and utilize CDC guidelines. I'm a Little League coach. We had a scrimmage this weekend with my kids' Little League team. We utilized social distancing. Everybody wore masks. The people were spread apart. We used hand sanitizer. There's ways to do it and ways to do it safely. And people need to not let their guard down yet and say, we're going back to normal. But I do think that there is an ability for us to get out there and enjoy our outdoors especially.
I agree. And the summer concert series sounds like a great idea. Thank you, David, for checking in with us.
Thank you so much for having me on, guys.
Fireworks can be spectacular displays, but for some, including our pets, they might not be wanted in many neighborhoods. Intercom's Jason Barsky talks with Wilkes-Barre Mayor George Brown about what he would like to see done on the state level about fireworks.
You're not out to destroy people's fun. You don't want to take fun away from people. But you did recently come out, and you weren't alone. You were with, city council and fire and police from Wilkes-Barre saying, we got to do something about fireworks.
Yeah, Jason, I held a press conference last Friday, and the message is that when Act 43 was passed through the legislature and Governor Wolf signed it, it opened up a lot of sales for fireworks that were not able to be sold before that. And one of the reasons is that it increased the sales tax on fireworks from 6% to 18%. So I don't feel that the 18% revenue that's getting to the state is worth all of the hardship that our people are going through. And I get calls every single day. Our police are out. Last weekend, we had over 200 calls for fireworks and related type calls. We have extra police on at night trying to locate the people. We're citing people. But the problem is, Jason, I can only cite them for a $100 fine. That's part of the Act 43. And I want to do one of two things, either repeal Act 43, stop the sale, or give the municipalities the authority to be able to impose stricter penalties. Under this act, I'm overruled by the governor and the state, so I can't do any more than impose a citation with a $100 fee on it.
Now, obviously the safety of people who live in Wilkes-Barre is important to you, but is it mostly noise complaints late at night, fireworks going off?
Yeah, it's a combination. We had a house burned down last year because of fireworks. It pulls our resources off of their normal, on the needs of the city. I'll give you an example. The police, the firemen, they're pulled off of their jobs to respond when we have to take care of things like a fire related to fireworks or all the calls that we're having related to fireworks. So that's one thing. But also, they're going off at 5 o'clock in the morning. They're going off at 2 o'clock in the morning. They're going off at midnight. They're going off at 11. And people are in bed. We have gotten calls from, I'll give you an example. I talked to one Marine veteran last week. It was right before the press conference. He said, Mayor, when they go off, I go right underneath my couch. He said, it brings back these terrible memories of Afghanistan. He said, I have a 3-year-old son, and he's scared. It's not even that. It's disrupting people's lives because people don't have the courtesy of not setting them off. They want to get this big bang out of it, literally, and it's ruining our people's their lives, basically. It's just a shame. I'm really upset about this.
Yeah, fireworks, fireworks can be fun. I remember when this was passed, I remember thinking to myself, well, that's the cost of, that little bit of extra tax money is what they're saying. Well, for people who are careless, it's worth it for that tax revenue. And I don't know that it necessarily is. I think this idea that we can light fireworks off whenever, wherever, with very little penalty it's a little too loose. The fact that people are letting these off in their backyards around other homes is probably not the smartest.
We have ordinances and laws that they're not supposed to within the city of Wilkes-Barre. You can't set it off within 150 feet of a residence, or you can't set it off on a city property. People are doing that. And the problem is that the revenue source was a key reason for this being passed, and I think that was wrong. It helped to balance the budget in 2017, but it's not worth what our people are going through today. And we're asking people to reach out to the state legislature and the governor's office and tell them repeal Act 43. Now, State Representative Schwenk from Berks County is actually going to be submitting a bill to repeal that. And I give her a lot of credit. I support her for that. I think our other representatives have to stand up and say, this is wrong. if the people got the calls that I'm getting, Jason, it's heartbreaking. It's sad. It really is. So I'm adamant about this, and I guess you could tell that in my voice.
Yeah.
But I just think it's wrong, Jason.
Do you get calls where people think gunshots, or is it mostly they know it's fireworks?
No, that, exactly what you said. We had five of them go off last week, 5 o'clock in the morning. You couldn't tell if it was a gunshot or fireworks. It turned out to be fireworks, but you can't tell. And they sound so close to that same noise, that fireworks or a gunshot, that our people have to investigate it. It's wrong. It just ties us up too much with the resources. But I'm worried, too, because we had someone that died in the city of Scranton last week with fireworks. I don't want that to happen to my residents. I don't want anybody being injured. I know people personally have lost fingers because of fireworks. That shouldn't happen.
Yeah, I mean, and we're talking about people who aren't, you know, the stereotype is, oh, yeah, a person blew their hand off using fireworks. What a dummy. Sometimes you have smart people who just make bad decisions. And the man you talked about who died at 31, he was 31. I mean, that's crazy. And he had a profession. It says professional-grade pyrotechnic.
Yeah.
Device. Probably not necessary. I mean, last year, I won't say how I know these people, but they invited me to a private show, and one of the things tipped over, and we almost all got hit. So when they work the way they're supposed to work, they're awesome. And seeing it up close and up close and personal, it's an awesome experience. But when they go wrong, like something goes wrong, it's terrifying. It's absolutely terrifying. And it makes me wonder, I don't know. I didn't like this last year, the risk of fire. And I'll be honest, last year I didn't really think about the noise. I figured, well, what are the chances people are going to light these off all year round? And sure enough, I was wrong that people are lighting them off all year round and late at night, and it's frustrating. What do you think the chances of anything actually happening with this are?
Well, that's a great question, because we've gotten an awful lot of support from people. Once we did the press conference on Friday, my phone's been ringing off the hook. I've gotten numerous emails and text messages saying, Mayor, we're going to contact our legislator. I walked into City Hall today, and one of my employees said, Mayor, I sent a message to the governor's office. It's building the support that we're looking for.
Gotcha.
That's how it's going to happen. We get the support of the people. We get the legislature to see that the people are behind repealing this act. That's how things change, Jason. It's not just one person.
Mm-hmm.
It's a grassroots type of support that we're getting. And it's amazing because I was really, it took right off Friday afternoon. I started getting these support calls.
Yeah, and I saw the Borough Council of German is going to vote Thursday to restrict it. Because right now, if I remember correctly, people can light these off all year round if they want.
Yes.
Yeah, it's not just a holiday-related thing, so you can put extra people on the street to make sure it's safe, extra firefighters. This is all year round. If you want to have a fireworks for a 12-year-old's birthday party in the middle of December, feel free, because the law says you can now. It seems unnecessary, but...
Well, the law says that you can purchase them, but you can't light them off in the city of Wilkes-Barre. There's no place that's legal in the city of Wilkes-Barre to light them off. And the problem is, when they light them off, and we go and we try to respond, it's in so many numerous places. Like I said, 200 calls in one weekend. That's just... It's unbelievable. So they can light them off if they find a place that's suitable. But our city is so dense right now that I don't know where you could find a place that has 150 feet where there's not a residence or a private property or a city property. And our fire chief said it the right way. He said, someone is going to get hurt. Someone is going to have a terrible situation when they light these fireworks off. It's going to happen. It's going to happen this year. And I'm just dreading that because I don't want to go through what Mayor Cognetti is going through in Scranton with the person, dying from this. I don't want that to happen.
Well, we'll follow this and see what happens. And just, this time of year used to be the time of year we'd have to worry about it, but it's happening. It's been happening for months now. And, keep us updated as to, what's happening. And it's interesting with all the bigger problems in the world, it doesn't seem like it's that pressing because we're seeing people die. We're seeing people fight in the streets and tearing statues down. But, I don't know. I don't like when it scares dogs. I'm a softie like that. I don't like it when it scares dogs, and I certainly don't like it when it brings back bad memories to people who served our country. It's something I hadn't thought of before to hear you say that. And
well,
please be safe.
Using the fireworks as a they're firing at each other. They're purchasing them and actually shooting them at people.
Wait, who's doing this?
Let me put it this way. They found that they can use them now as a weapon.
Lovely.
And that's another thing now. I can't get into that because we have enough, as you said, tensions and stress that's going on.
Yeah.
But it's not just the dogs. It's not just it's a quality of life that's being ruined by these people. And that's the message I'm trying to get out there.
I got you.
You know, people can't sit and watch TV or go to bed at 11 o'clock at night without being up until 3 o'clock in the morning. Last week I heard from a nurse. She called me. She said, I'm an ER nurse. She said, I was up all night with these fireworks, and now I have to go to work today. It's really ruining their quality of life, Jason.
So, and like I said, let us...
just an inconvenience. It really is.
Don't go away. There's more Special Edition to come. Welcome back to Special Edition. I'm Paula Degnan. On this 4th of July weekend, National Historic Sites may be one place that you would like to plan a visit. Gettysburg National Historic Site is one of those. And there have been some discussions about something that might be taking place there this weekend. So in order to find out what it is and will it really happen, Intercom's Jason Barsky spoke with Jason Martz from the Gettysburg National Historic Site to get all the details.
Jason Martz, who is the public affairs officer and the visual information specialist at Gettysburg National Military Park. Good morning, Jason.
Good morning, sir. How are you?
Good. Thank you for taking the time this morning. Appreciate it. Let's start with people tearing down statues and monuments of things that they don't think are worthy of being up in public. Gettysburg is home to, I just counted 40 Confederate statues and monuments throughout the park.
Right.
And I know this isn't the first time this has come up. I was looking, there's articles just as recent as a couple years ago of people saying, it's time these come down. Has the Gettysburg, the people behind the park, ever considered changing how they do things and moving them? Is that even a possibility that's even ever discussed?
It really isn't. All of the statues and monuments on the Gettysburg battlefield, including the Confederate examples, and there are over 1,300 total, by the way, have either been specifically authorized by Congress or they have been in place for so long that they actually qualify as historic features in and to themselves.
Really?
So they are as intrinsic to the battlefield as the battlefield is on its own.
You couldn't remove them if you wanted to. Not that you do, but you couldn't. That's interesting. I always looked at Gettysburg and the fields, and because it's history, it's almost like an outdoor museum more than it is just a random place a statue is sitting. It's not just like, hey, here's the park where the kids play and people have picnics and there's a statue of a Confederate general. This is where the battle happened. So to me, it's like an outdoor museum. So I always felt like that would, what you're saying is probably what I would go along with. I couldn't imagine taking that stuff out because what is Gettysburg without two sides?
Exactly. Yeah, that's a great way to explain it. Versus what you see happening in a lot of town squares and traffic circles going on throughout the country. It's a very different feel for sure. Outdoor museum is a great way to put it.
You know, there's obviously a discussion that can be had. I don't agree with people going in and vandalizing or taking down statues anywhere. Personally, I feel like there's a better way. But I also have talked to enough people to go, there's probably a conversation to be had. And I know that you guys hold special events. Have you guys ever held conversations discussing the controversy behind it? Like just different meetings of different groups, peaceful things where you'd have just discussions about why things are hurtful or the past hurts some people versus others?
Oh, absolutely. This is a common discussion at battlefields like Gettysburg. And this is a common occurrence and has been for a very long time. So this... just because the current circumstances are shining a very bright light on this topic right now, this is actually something that we deal with on a very consistent basis.
So you're not afraid of having the conversation. No one's shying away from the conversation. It's just it's not on the plans anytime soon to start dismantling anything because that would take away from what you guys are all about.
Yeah, exactly. We don't shy away from the difficult conversations because the monuments themselves lend that topic in many cases. So it's something that we embrace, and just because it's a difficult topic doesn't mean we shy away from it.
Like, one thing I've thrown out there as far as instead of tearing the statues down, adding more context to the way things originally were versus how they were when monuments and statues were put up versus today's current climate. Where everyone's, you know, angry at each other. Ever thought of a way to adapt the locations, whether it's new signage or something, to kind of discuss the controversy, or is that something that hasn't been discussed?
That's actually something that's in the works, probably on at least two different fronts. One would be that our interpretive staff, our park rangers, have been presenting programs about the African-American experience in Gettysburg for many years. So that's, again, that's an ongoing thing, just as we have been having this discussion as an ongoing issue. And then the other thing is that when you do go to national parks or sites like the National Park Service, you'll often see outdoor exhibits, standalone exhibits and so forth. They're, we call them wayside exhibits. And there's a massive redo of the wayside exhibits within the battlefield. Many of them are at least 20 years old. They're not in the best shape. And some of them are even older than that. So there's kind of a mixed mix. It's all kind of a mix of no, I wouldn't say newer ones, but older ones and then out-of-date ones and this and so forth. So there's a massive plan ongoing that is calling for a number of new ones to be put in as part of an overall rehab of this wayside project throughout the entire battlefield. And this is something that's going through the necessary process right now. And a number of those, when the new ones go out, and I think it's going to be, I want to say next year. This is a long-term project. It takes a while to get these kinds of things through. But when that project is completed, we will have a number of new ones that do address this very topic. And again, it's something that we don't shy away from. So we have this conversation all the time. We have ranger-led programs pre-COVID. We're not doing them right now, unfortunately, due to social distancing and so forth. And then the new wayside project. So we're attacking this on a number of different fronts.
As a kid, I remember being taught history in school, and we would talk about what happened. We go through the facts. We talk sometimes about why they happened, but it was never discussed even as a possibility that these things were sometimes open to interpretation and the time would change our perception. And I think that's kind of what's happening here. So to see the Gettysburg Park just kind of trying to evolve and kind of update a little bit of the thinking is kind of interesting. Probably controversial with some people who just want things to stay the same, but it's the world. It changes constantly, right?
Yeah, you're exactly right. This is something that has continued to evolve over years, dates and centuries. Where we were 50 years ago is different than where we were, where we are now. Where we were 5 years ago is different than where we are now. So yeah, we have to evolve with the time, and we think we're trying to, again, we don't shy away from difficult conversations with us.
Speaking of difficult conversations, let's segue over to this, because I know people are allowed to protest in and around Gettysburg and the battlefields, not on the battlefields, but you have locations. There was a Facebook group, I think it was taken down, Left Behind USA, promoting this July 4th, quote, peaceful flag burning to resist police. I mean, it sounds very peaceful and non-threatening to everybody. I kid. What is the status? What have you heard? Have you heard about this? And B, are they allowed to do this? I mean, if I wanted to go burn a flag, could I just show up tomorrow and be like, I'm burning a flag, everybody?
Yeah, the First Amendment rights are obviously something that we also take very seriously, and within a federal landscape like Gettysburg, we do have areas of the battlefield set aside for First Amendment right activities, but a permit would have to be submitted to the park. That would be studied by the park management, and we would have the opportunity to allow something like that to happen or not. And the one that you're speaking of specifically, the Facebook posts about it and the Twitter posts about it were taken down, I believe, late Wednesday is when those came down. But yes, we've been very much aware of those ever since, pretty much since they went up, I think, in early June, so a couple weeks ago. And if something like that were to be a permit would be written up, we would look at it and then go from there.
Is it something that you think the parks, or is there a history of the parks, the Gettysburg Park in particular, agreeing to allow a flag burning? Have they done it? Have they agreed to allow one in the past?
No, not to my knowledge. Not to my knowledge. But that doesn't mean that it couldn't be done in such a fashion that wouldn't cause damage to especially natural resources. One of the other concerns that we have when it comes to whether it be First Amendment activity or just lots and lots of people showing up, one of the main concerns is first the safety of visitors, the safety of staff, and then the safety of the natural and cultural resources of the park itself. So if something like that would be deemed dangerous to the park as far as the natural and cultural resources, it's very possible that like that would be denied. But maybe that we would come back and say, here, there's another alternative. Would you look at it from this perspective or this perspective? Because unfortunately, we would have to, in some cases, let's say a flag burning. Our immediate concern would be, would that catch fire if the conditions of the ground and the grasses around the area tinder dry? And so it would cause all of a sudden a wildfire that would rage potentially throughout the entire battlefield, affect right. the town, and that kind of thing. So we're not just looking at it from a First Amendment right perspective, although that's incredibly important, but we have lots of variables that we would have to take into account.
What do you think the likelihood of this flag burning happening are? Because I know I see people saying, I'm going down, we're going down there, and we're going to fight. We're going to stand up for this country. We're going to stand up to these people. Is this flag burning going to happen, or is it a hoax? What do you know?
We are taking it very seriously. We're planning as if it's going to happen. I think, again, your analysis here is spot on, that we don't know.
Okay.
It is an unknown, and we're taking it very seriously as if it is going to happen, and so we are planning to be as prepared as we possibly can.
I've seen groups like this that decide to have these. Most groups that seem like they're just throwing things together have some sort of organization behind them, at least one person who's got some focus. Have they filed permits? Have they done all the proper paperwork so if it gets approved, they can go? Or what's the status of that?
So far, no permits have been received as far as that's concerned. However, one came in late yesterday afternoon. An individual has applied for a space to have a table to hand out information on the Constitution and the Bill of Rights.
But not to burn the Constitution. That's not what we're talking about.
No. This is a peaceful demonstration. First Amendment rights, just a small space. He'd like to have a table to dispense information about the Constitution and the Bill of Rights.
But there's been no permit filed by this Left Behind USA for a flag burning on July 4th.
Correct.
You know, someone could just show up. In situations like this, when things go viral and people are, you know, I mean, like I said before, if there were 10 different boxes to check on how to push people's buttons, every box would be checked over this. It's burning the flag. It's on July 4th. It seems like they're just trying to push buttons. So what type of turnout do you expect as an opposition group?
There was a similar circumstance to this one in 2017. And the initial group was a no-show. And the opposition groups were plentiful. So we're expecting something similar this time. But again, we are preparing and will be prepared for any different scenario.
Okay, that's good to know. I mean, if I had a bet, I'd say they're not going to show. Even if they planned on showing, when they start hearing things like this, I don't think they show. I don't know how gutsy they are. But I feel like this is you're walking into they wanted to be the pot stirrers there. And they'd be the ones who'd be stirred. And I mean, I don't mean that as like a threat. I just feel like people would be there to create a scene and shut them down. It seems like for everyone's best interest, if they were really considering doing this, might be best not to do it because, well, I don't want to see anyone get hurt. I'm all for First Amendment. Hey, you want to go burn a flag, go for it. Just I won't do it. I'm not going to be part of it. And I can't protect you because I'm a wimp. But still, I can't imagine they're going to show up. But it's good to know you have a plan just in case. It's great to know, actually. Look, at Gettysburg, I thought you guys were a little bit further. It's about 2.5 hours from Northeast PA. I haven't been down there in quite some time, and I plan on bringing the kids down, probably with my daughter. I got a 3-year-old. When she's a little older, I think we're going to come down there. So I always forget how close it is, and it's such an amazing sight to be seen. Such a great place to visit.
Yeah, absolutely. It certainly holds a special place in the hearts and minds of a lot of people, both United States citizens as well as many folks from overseas as well. This is a place that probably I've heard from a number of different people over the years. This is definitely one of those places that are on a lot of people's bucket lists and one of those places they have to get to.
Yeah, absolutely. When I lived on the West Coast for 10 years and people would say, oh, you were there? They couldn't believe I was there. And I was like, well, yeah, it was pretty close. And you take it for granted sometimes when it's right in your own backyard. But listen, thank you for answering the questions. Good to know. I'm happy to hear the park's not going to change anything with the monuments. You're not planning on changing anything as far as tearing them down, getting rid of things, just embracing the history, leading into it, trying to evolve, and also being ready for anyone who may show up with an agenda to ruffle feathers. So Jason Martz, the public affairs officer for Gettysburg National Military Park. Jason, thanks for calling in. I greatly appreciate it, okay?
You're very welcome, sir. Have a great day.
Now, don't go away. We're still talking about getting help for those who have been affected by COVID-19 when we return on Special Edition. Welcome back to Special Edition. During the coronavirus pandemic, we've all learned many things, including what may be lacking in some of the systems that we've come to know. Bill Johnston Walsh is the Pennsylvania State Director of AARP. I had the opportunity to talk with Bill about some of the things that they've learned during the coronavirus pandemic about care for nursing homes, other long-term care facilities, and assisted living. You might be surprised what else AARP is doing.
Let's talk first of all, give us a background for anybody who may not know. Tell us about AARP.
Sure. AARP is a national nonprofit membership organization. We have 38 million members across the country. Right here in Pennsylvania, we have 1.8 million members. What we do for our members on the nonprofit side, which I represent here as the state director in Pennsylvania, is we do advocacy, outreach, and education on all issues that impact the 50-plus.
Well, and I must say I am a proud member, so there you go.
Excellent, excellent. I'm really glad to hear that.
And, you know, when people think of AARP, they usually think of insurance, they think of travel, they think of, but it, as you're explaining, you're so much more than that. And especially with this COVID-19 situation and the nursing homes, how have you played a part?
We've played an important part, I think. You know, we've been hearing from our 1.8 million members here in the Commonwealth and other families that are just devastated by what's happening. No family should be going through what these families had to endure for what's been happening in the nursing home situation during this pandemic. In Pennsylvania, there's roughly about 700 nursing homes with over 80,000 residents at any given point, between 80 and 100,000. The COVID-19 cases in those nursing homes since the beginning to date have been over 20,000. The deaths in those nursing homes to date have been over 4,000. That's almost 70% of the total of the deaths in the Commonwealth. And we just feel that that's just unacceptable. And we've been working with the governor, with the nursing home industry, and with the federal government to see how we can work on this issue and make sure the safety and wellness of those nursing home residents and the staff are kept right in the forefront.
So what have you been doing and what have you been finding out that had been lacking?
Well, what we've been doing is we've been focusing at the state level on testing, regular testing, We've been working on PPE, so that's the mask, the gowns, and the gloves, making sure that the nursing homes have those. We've been looking at daily reporting. There was a point that we had no idea what nursing homes had the virus, how many deaths were in those nursing homes based county by county. It was just a general number, and we were able to fight for to make sure the reporting was done by the Department of Health. And then the last thing was virtual visitation. So what AARP did is we were able to get the governor and the state legislature to have regular testing. Now, the devil's in the details because we fought for that. There's a baseline testing for all nursing homes in the Commonwealth that the governor set to be done by July 24th. So, you know, we're in July now. We're coming upon that. And we can tell you that there are some nursing facilities that have been doing regular weekly testing of their staff and residents. There are some that have done sporadic testing, that kind of once and done testing, then that could have happened months ago. And then there's others that have not had any testing done at all. So we're really trying to get everyone on the same page and trying to get them to get to this July 24th deadline. The other piece is with the protective equipment, the personal protective equipment, like the masks, like the gowns and the gloves. What we've been finding is that hospitals, for the most part, have had no problem getting this. Nursing homes have had some issues working with the providers, working with the state and federal government to be able to get these. We've been finding that in some parts of the state, there's been plenty of gowns, but there's a shortage of masks and gloves. In other parts of the state, they don't have the gowns, but they do have others. So it goes back and forth no matter where you are. What AARP is trying to do is making sure that this is a level playing field across the Commonwealth. We need to use these months right now to start building towards the fall and the possibility of a second outbreak of the pandemic. And we want to make sure that the nursing homes are on the same level as others, like hospitals throughout the Commonwealth.
Why do you suppose that would have happened? That there would have been such a disparity between hospitals and nursing home facilities?
I'm not sure. Right from the very beginning of this pandemic, AARP we've been jumping right in to say this is unacceptable. The nursing homes have been the hotbed of the virus, not just here in Pennsylvania, but across the country. And what we've been trying to make the point is you know the governor and the secretary of health have been doing a good job. You know, they were thrown into this pandemic as well, and they've been doing a pretty good job of doing this. But where they've been falling down, in our opinion, is with the nursing homes. You know, right away, you know, we've heard about hospitals. We heard about businesses. We even heard about when golf courses were going to be opening up. We just wanted to make sure that nursing homes were at the same level as all of these other important issues. And that has not been the case. And we're slowly getting the governor and the state legislature to that place right now. It's a little late, but better late than never. And we want to make sure that residents, staffing, and their families are where they need to be as we move forward.
Would you say that, and I know this is going to sound kind of odd, but the whole COVID-19 pandemic almost sounds like a double-edged sword. It wasn't good, but at the same time, it did open up a lot of issues that maybe otherwise would still be not known.
Yeah, I guess you could put it like that. I wouldn't say the COVID pandemic was a good thing, but yes, what it's doing is it's shining a light on long-term care in the Commonwealth and letting people know that nursing homes are part of the continuum of care, just like home and community-based services are, keeping people in their homes as long as possible, assisted living, personal care homes. They're all important pieces of the puzzle. They haven't been funded the way they should be funded. And you're right that this pandemic has shown a light on that. We've been able to get $500 million down through the CARES Act from the federal government that was allotted through the state legislature and signed by the governor to go to the nursing homes to help them. what we're looking for now at AARP is to put additional pressure that in the next stimulus package that comes down from the federal government, that they really focus in on nursing homes, focus in on money for testing and reliable testing that we can get out there, focus on the PPE, get additional dollars to get the protective gear that we need, virtual visitations or you know, making sure that we have the equipment in place that will allow loved ones to talk to the residents and their families, you know, throughout this piece. We at AARP, that's one piece that one small piece of the pie that we've been helping out with. We were able to work with the governor to reach out to a handful. Like as I mentioned earlier, there's 700 nursing homes. We were able to get into about 50 to 60 of those nursing homes with some virtual equipment, some iPads and some cell phones, so that family members can work, can contact the residents, the loved ones in the facilities, so they can start having that conversation, because social isolation is not a good thing. And what we've been seeing is the depression levels of these residents have just been skyrocketing.
So many positive things coming out of this, because the whole idea of virtual communication, even on a daily basis in a time of no pandemic, is sometimes probably not even thought of, because if you can't get there to see someone, you know, what other recourse would you have? So again, you've talked about shining the light and opening another door there. What would you suggest to even residents, to families of residents, to do in order to, again, bring more awareness to all this that is going on and that they have been dealing with? Because there may be a lot of people who are listening who have no immediate dealing with a nursing home today, but yeah, Tomorrow could be a different story.
That's exactly right. The long-term care piece will touch everyone, whether you're going to be a caregiver, whether it's a close loved one that's in a facility right now, or you know, you're caring for them at home. What AARP is doing right now is we're focused. You know, we've been focused at the state level. We've been really pushing the governor and the state legislature and moving in the right direction, we believe. We're just not there yet, and we need to continue. It's really now the focus is on the federal government. Congress needs to do another stimulus package, just like they did with the CARES Act. And what family members can do and what community members can do is they can contact their state legislators, their federal Congress people, Senator Casey, Senator Toomey, and just really let them know how important this is, that there are dollars that are really specific towards what's been happening in these nursing homes, and getting those dollars down on a timely basis so that we can stop this and stop, you know, pretty much the killing of our loved ones in these facilities with this virus.
Bill, anything that you would like to leave as a last thought to our listeners today?
Sure. The one piece that, you know, going back to the virtual visitations, I just want to give a shout out to Senator Casey. He has really been focused in on our nursing home issues, and one of his bills is to get money for equipment down to the state level. It's a bipartisan bill that he's doing with Senator Cassidy from Louisiana, we really are supportive of that, and really would like to, you know, thank the senator for the work that he's doing on that front.
Now Intercom's Frank Andrews talks with Scranton Mayor Paige Cognetti on what's happened since Lackawanna County's been green.
You also are doing your small business loan program as well, right?
Yeah, so we had a successful grant program in the last couple of weeks. We're really excited about that. Now that the grants process has gone through today, we opened the loan window. So if you go to scrantonworks.org, if you have a business in Scranton, up to $3 million in revenue, you can apply for a loan between $3,000 and $20,000. And we've got $285,000 that we're working with there. So we're hoping that we can be able to help some of those businesses, especially those that maybe fit that $1 to $3 million range. Those grants that we gave out were up to $1 million revenue. So up to $3 million revenue opens us up to some more businesses in Scranton.
Now that the county is officially green, are you concerned about people kind of dropping their guard?
I am very concerned. That's why, you know, at City Hall, for example, we're really only allowing access to that one office. The other appointments are appointment only, and we're trying to have folks just do business, you know, even in the downstairs, so that we don't have folks, you know, wandering through the halls. It's concerning at every level. I see those cases rising, not just in the rest of the country. We haven't seen the numbers ticking up here, but we have to remain vigilant. We've got to wear masks. I know there's, I know it's hard, and a lot of people are trying to make it kind of a political statement to wear or not wear a mask. It's just not that hard. We just got to wear them. It's easy for all of us to forget, but we have to do it. We have to do it even when we go into a store, especially. You can't go into a business. You can't go into a restaurant without it. You have to think about others. This isn't about political statements. This is about safety and respect.
Weston Field is opening. Now, does that mean that the indoor pool is open?
No. So the gym is indoors, and that is open. The basketball court there is open, but not the pool. So we're still assessing the pool openings. We've set expectations that we aren't going to. We are looking at it. We've got to make a call. It's tough. It's a real tough one. I know that you can't contract COVID through the water itself, but it's the crowds around the water and things. So we're trying to figure out how we can do that, how we can potentially safely reopen a couple of our pools. But right now, as it stands, Weston's indoor pool is not open.
Yeah, when the decision was made, no La Festa, it kind of broke my heart, and I was looking for all kinds of ways to make that happen. But now I'm thinking you got the Novena coming up in West Scranton. You've got a gazillion Scranton churches and different organizations that have picnics. Are you going to suggest that they cancel, or what are you going to do about all that?
Yeah, I'm not sure yet. We certainly, I don't think we're there yet. You know, we've only been in green phase for 4 days now, and under green phase, that gatherings is set at 250, which, we've been going by the governor's orders, and so, 250 is what it is right now. But I think we are, I know we're really closely tracking it. We'll continue to closely track it, and we'll certainly be making sure that we are calling the organizers of gatherings just like we've been doing, and say, these things have got to have masks, you got to have the distancing, maybe you've got to stagger your services and things like that, so that you don't have more than 250 people. I am very worried. I'm hoping that people utilize outdoor areas as much as possible. I know we're not doing public meetings at the City Hall building. I know Naog Park, one of the authorities, is going to have a public meeting at Naog Park, I think, at some point in July. Just trying to keep outdoors as much as possible, because it's indoors is where the transmissions are at much higher risk.
Now, if there is a protest or a rally, traditionally they have come and they've sat down with you in the police department. Mm-hmm. Do you basically tell them and don't have more than 250 protesters?
I mean, we always state the guidelines. I mean, we say that, with all these things, I'm very supportive of people exercising free speech and getting out and making sure their voices are heard. But in all of the conversations, during yellow phase, we reminded people of the 25-person guidance. And, now in green phase, obviously 250 people guidance. So if something's a protest, there's, First Amendment, we aren't in a position to stop that. We're not going to stop that from happening, but we can continue to give that guidance and remind people, and even provide, with the protest that happened a couple weeks ago, we set out some masks at City Hall and offering ways to try to help keep people safe. We just remain working hard and watching this every day.
Once again, I'm Paula Degnan, and thank you for joining us this weekend on Special Edition. And of course, everyone here at Intercom Communications wishes you and yours a very happy and safe 4th of July holiday weekend.
Thanks for listening to Special Edition, a weekly look at the issues in the news and the personalities shaping the stories, a production of Intercom Communications.
Baseball is back, basketball is heating up, and the NFL draft is right around the corner. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app, the biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.